Welcome to the Gulf Coast Life Book Club. I'm your host, Carrie Barber. Maris Kreisman's new book, I Want to Burn This Place Down, is a collection of essays that comments on the contemporary culture around her as well as her own growth and change from her teen years into her 40s. At its heart is a profound disappointment in American institutions and the dashing of the long-held idea that if we work hard and follow the rules, we will have a satisfying and well-funded life. Kreisman is a well-known lover of books who writes widely about them for Lit Hub, New York Magazine, The New York Times, and more. She's the former editorial director of Book of the Month, among other posts, and this is her second book. Maris, welcome to the Gulf Coast Life Book Club.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so happy to have you. You're our book expert on a book show. It's just very meta. I love it. You're our people. First, can you explain your title, I Want to Burn This Place Down?
Yes. It comes actually from the final season of Mad Men. Peggy and Joan have a meeting with the new people in charge of the company, whose name I won't remember because it's constantly changing.
Right.
And they have been on the ground working so hard, and they're really growing in their career and as individuals. And of course, the people, the men hired to oversee them do not care. Not only do they, you know, sexually harass them, but it's more like they don't even care to know what's going on in the company that they're supposedly in charge of. And Joan, who so often plays along and shuts her mouth and keeps her head down, is cool and calm in the meeting. And then afterwards, they go into the elevator and Peggy says, what should we do for lunch? And Joan says, I want to burn this place down. And it spoke to me. It really did.
Yeah, it's such a great, that scene just encapsulates so much of what you write about in this essay collection. There's one essay called Neoliberalism and Me, in which you write what your 14-year-old self believes, quote, I know that as long as I work hard and play by the rules, I will reap the rewards. I'm sure that anyone who chooses to do the same can do so as well, unquote. And I can so relate to that feeling as a young person and kind of being fed it, but also just believing it on my own somehow. From then until now, your beliefs have changed drastically. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. I'm glad I wrote this book in middle age because I've had enough time to kind of see how the professional world works and the cultural world works. And I can't believe that I ever thought that that was a good strategy for anyone. And I didn't realize how incredibly lucky I was to have ever believed that that would be something you could do in America. And I've just gotten angrier at the ways that I feel like personal responsibility is such a important but small part of what it takes to succeed. And without acknowledging all of the systems in place that make it...
The system is rigged.
The system is rigged. The system is rigged. And I think I noticed that the most when I realized that after having diabetes for 30 years, I didn't care anymore if the disease ever got cured. I just didn't want people to die from lack of access to a drug supposed to be affordable.
But I mean, in your defense, we were fed that. I mean, especially as women, I think, you know, like, all the women I know who I went to college with and worked with early in my career, like we all thought that if you just work, you'll get, you know, you'll climb the ladder and get to the top and blah, blah, blah. And yet it took us all until about middle age to go, oh, no, that's not really how it works.
That really didn't happen. And I think partly it's for me, especially. The world that I was trying to get into, corporate book publishing, has changed quite a bit. And I think careers in general in the United States used to offer more security than what we have now.
For
like,
sure.
overall. And yeah, I definitely thought that there was a way to behave so that every few years I'd get the next cookie, you know?
Right. I want to get back to the diabetes thing too, but let me just, let's stay on the, let's stay on corporate book publishing.
Yes.
So much to talk about. So you write about HarperCollins, who is your very own publisher of this book.
Yes.
And you talk about them unionizing. Can you tell me, I thought that was another really interesting example of how you kind of thought things were one way and then saw how they indeed were quite different and you kind of changed your mind.
100%. When I started as an assistant in book publishing in the early aughts, I was supposed to be happy to be there. And no matter how low the pay was or how much overtime I was supposed to work, I was just supposed to be glad that I had the opportunity to be overworked like that. And at the time, I remember talking to another assistant and them saying, we should unionize. And I thought, you know, what, we're not longshoremen, you know, like this isn't for us. Like unions are not for us. And it's been so gratifying over the past decade or so to see more and more people learn, including me, that unions are, in fact, for us. They're for everyone.
Because the workers are not getting, I mean, almost everyone in publishing, but certainly entry-level people are so underpaid, particularly when you probably have to live in New York.
Yep.
And the work is nonstop. It's just, you know, and like you said, you're supposed to, it's like, you know, a million girls would kill for this job from Devil Wears Prada. It's that kind of thing where you're supposed to just be grateful for the job and oh, I'm terribly sorry, but you're not going to be able to have a life.
Absolutely. And, you know, what they were striking for, a huge chunk of it was about salary. Mm. And what they were arguing for was to go from a starting salary of $45,000 in New York City to $50,000. Mm. And that $5,000 at stake had them on strike for 2 months. And that's all while, you know, politicians are getting multi-million dollar deals to write their autobiographies.
Right. From that very same company. Right. Oh, my goodness. I'm getting enraged about publishing. But let's talk about books, which we both love. You're a book lover, as am I. And they've really made up most of your career. Can you talk just philosophically a little bit, like what do you, and also despite all the horrors in the in the real world of publishing and writing, what do books give you? What do you get from the well of books?
Yeah, I sometimes, when I get really, really down, especially on the publishing industry and related media and how there isn't much room for criticism anymore, I kind of have to step back and say, but the books are still good. And I go and look over at my to-read pile, which is many piles, in fact. And I think there are so many problems with this industry, but the books are still good and they're coming fast and furious. And that gives me hope. That is the most enjoyable part about working in and around books, is the actual reading of them.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I feel the same way that and sometimes I can't believe how they keep coming fast and furious.
I don't know if you feel guilty sometimes, like you're one person, but you get, you know, a couple hundred books a year and it's not humanly possible to look at them, but I feel responsible in some way.
I do too. And also the fact that so many book sections have gone away and like you said before, book critics have gone away and newspapers themselves have gone away. It's just, it's
bad.
I just want to be out here cheering for our little books.
100%.
If you're just joining us, we are talking to Maris Kreisman, author of I Want to Burn This Place Down, on the Gulf Coast Life Book Club. You had a well-regarded podcast interviewing writers, speaking of that, called The Maris Review for about 5 years, right? Was it about five years?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm interested to hear, how did talking to all those writers help you when you were writing this book?
It really did. It made me realize that it's important to have a story to tell, but it's also important to have a story of the story to tell.
Mm.
And I realized that the authors who were the most well-spoken on my podcast came in with an idea of the story behind the story. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really helpful. And it also makes me feel a little less guilty about telling everyone that they should read it and buy my book, because I've talked to so many other authors who understand, and I've been on that other side so many times.
That's true. You have certainly put enough in the bank in terms of promoting other people's books. That's interesting, too. And how did I often want to say to writers, like, you don't have to do this interview.
Of course.
Some of them who I can tell they don't want to do it, you know, and it's like, it's OK. You don't have to do it. You know, it's optional.
Yeah. I mean, I say the same thing about social media. If you hate it, just don't do it. It only really helps to move the needle if you enjoy it or are good at pretending that you enjoy it.
Right. How did your podcast help you, too? Because now, right now you're like in the middle of doing press for this book, right? Or you're maybe at the tail end. How did it help you with that specifically, like to have been on both sides of the mic?
I'm not doing a great job of it here, but the less rambling, the better. It's very helpful to be precise in what you want to say and yet still have your personality come through.
Is there anything that you, working around books and publishing for so long, was there anything that you felt you kind of had in your pocket to get your book published or to finish writing it? Or did you like pick up any tips throughout your long career around books?
Oh, a ton. And I don't think this book would exist if I hadn't been working in and around books. I don't think the press I've gotten would exist if I hadn't been, you know, doing book criticism and knowing all of the other people in my class who are covering books. That's been an enormous help. And I knew a variety of people at my publisher before I sold the book to them. And I want to be really clear about that because, I had an inside track and I want to acknowledge that for sure.
Yes, but you still had to do the work. I mean, writing a book of essays is a real challenge, I think. Did you ever consider another format or just a nonfiction book or anything like that? Or you always knew it would be essays?
I'm still trying to see if I can write fiction. And the answer right now is no. And I thought for a while about doing this more as a straight memoir. Mm-hmm. And I found the constraints of essay writing to be helpful, actually.
Can you say more about that?
Yeah. Like, I knew I would have this space to talk about this particular thing. And even if themes ran throughout the book, I knew I would have a very specific place to put all my feelings about X.
Yes, that's interesting. Yeah, sometimes the guardrails are helpful to keep everything in one little box.
Yeah.
And you mentioned this before, but you write really beautifully about living with diabetes and, I mean, the crazy stuff that's happening with the medication for diabetes, and also how climate change is making the condition worse. Can you say more about that?
I lived it yesterday. I live in New York City, and I took my dog for a walk at about 3 p.m., and it was 100 degrees outside. Mm-hmm. And I looked down at my continuous glucose monitor, which keeps track of my blood sugar at all times, and I could just see my blood sugar getting higher and higher the longer I was outside in that heat. Any stress to your body is going to mess with your blood sugar. And so heat is just one of many, but the one we feel most right now, for sure.
Wow, that is so upsetting. It's so upsetting. It's like there's nothing you can really do about it. I mean, except for stay inside, I guess, or stay in the air conditioning. But, oh, yeah, that's...
Yeah.
It's alarming. When I was reading that essay, it really was something I had never thought about before. And I'm so glad you brought it to light, because it's just one more thing that's a problem with healthcare.
And then when you think about it, of course, I am so lucky to be able to have air conditioning.
Right.
And when you think about the enormous number of people around the world who don't and who do have diabetes, it's really upsetting.
Yeah. And you also hit on one of my pet peeves, which is that our health insurance system depends on a spouse or a job.
Yes.
And even, you know, Venus Williams said she had to get back to playing tennis so she could get health insurance. I mean, that, if that doesn't tell
Incredible.
You there's a problem, I don't know what does. But can you say a little bit more about that, too, because you write really beautifully about that, too.
Yeah, thank you. I always knew as a kid that I would have corporate jobs. There was no taking the time to find myself or like trying to be a freelance writer. Like, I needed jobs that would come with health insurance and good health insurance. And so I worked from job to job. And, you know, sometimes I didn't leave, even though I probably should have. Mm-hmm. And then I was lucky enough to meet my husband and fall in love with him and realize that if we got married, I'd be able to freelance. And that seemed so unfair. I'd been so unlucky in love for so many years. And it's like, how is this a thing? Why is this the reason why I get to have health insurance? It seems absurd.
And it seems like it should be completely unrelated. I mean, it's...
Absolutely.
It's bizarre. And I have to, because we're on NPR, I have to mention that your husband is the wonderful Josh Gondelman from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and a million other places.
Yeah.
He's a gem.
He is.
And this book is not as grim as it may sound. I feel like there's a lot of hope in here, and I really appreciated that you, I feel like your voice is pretty hopeful throughout. And especially you advocate for developing community as a response to sort of the crumbling, I don't know what to call it, crumbling infrastructure, crumbling systems. Or maybe systems that never existed in the first place. Mm-hmm. Do you have any suggestions about how people can start to have more of a community in their lives?
Yeah, for me, it was, I've always been a book person. And so I wanted to do advocacy based around books. I'm on the board of Authors Against Book Bans. Mm-hmm. And that's been really wonderful in terms of connecting me with other writers. The thing that I realized about diabetes when insulin prices were so off the charts is that mutual aid is really the most dependable way to get people what they need. I had so many different elected officials tweeting about how it wasn't right that insulin prices were so high, but I was the one who actually had to send insulin to other people to actually make a change. And so it was communities I was already a part of that I decided to just get more active in and to try to make a positive change in. I mean, I think it's starting with your friends and family is a great way to build community.
We're in Florida here at WGCU, and we have had a number of really bad hurricanes. And I know that when we had the worst one we had a couple of years ago was when I finally got to know my neighbors. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you read Tilt by Emma Pattee.
Not yet.
Oh, it's so good. But anyway, when I was interviewing her about her book, she said, you know, that's really the only thing you can do about this kind of climate change disaster is You have to befriend your neighbors. You have to have a community because it's not, you know, FEMA is not going to help you at 2 a.m.
Unfortunately, we've really seen that already.
I mean, they may help you eventually, but it's like when my neighbor said, oh, we have a generator, come over. You know, that's the help you need at the time you need it. And it's what you're saying about the diabetes medications, too. It's like, I have some that I can send you. Here you go, you know?
Yeah. And I do think even just like walking around my neighborhood, I think I was taught as a young woman who recently moved to New York that I was supposed to be on guard, that I shouldn't trust strangers, mm-hmm. that I shouldn't smile at other people. And just being a little bit more open really helps build a community, you know, smile at people. I don't want to be that woman to be like, you should smile more. But that has worked for me.
Yes. If you just get into like, especially I find in New York, if you just, you know, you get into like some stupid conversation with somebody and you find that you have many connections and it is the way to build community. It's a beautiful thing. Well, we're getting to the end of our time. Is there anything else that you would like to discuss about the book?
Yeah, the one thing I learned from writing this book that I didn't quite anticipate was how much the internet and social media specifically helped to radicalize me. And I think we hear about that so much from the right, that social media has caused a family member to be involved in QAnon or so many different kinds of right-wing things, that having access to other people's voices and thought made me see how big the world is and how many people need help.
And how many different stories there are. I mean, no matter what, no matter how widely you may read or, you know, listen to whatever stations you may listen to, you're not. Somebody is always curating what you're hearing. So I agree with you. You know, you just hear a lot of individual stories. And it's kind of like when the Arab Spring, as we called it then, you know, I didn't know what was going on the ground until I saw people writing on Twitter. And it's really something.
Absolutely. And that's with Black Lives Matter protests, too. Actually seeing the people on the ground and what the experience was like, it changed me.
Yes. Maris, thank you so much for joining us on the Gulf Coast Life Book Club.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
That was Maris Kreisman, the author of I Want to Burn This Place Down. Buy the book from Macintosh Books through bookshop.org or order it from Books and Books in Miami. We will have links at WGCU.org. I'm your host, Carrie Barber. We had production help today from Mike Canary. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.